Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel.
And we are joined now by one of Tina's doctors that you met in that story, Dr. Kutluk Oktay, head of the Fertility Preservation Department. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm actually surprised.
Can we delay or skip menopause completely?
Menopause is numbers game, right? So if you could just keep the numbers where they are, you get there.
What you're saying is we could potentially delay this, or I might be the last generation to even go through menopause.
Absolutely. Estrogen is a drug. It's a very behavioral hormone. I had a patient once, she called herself an estrogen junkie. She was addicted to estrogen.
Are there certain breakthroughs that you are hoping to discover?
My research laboratory, we discovered, for example, drugs that slow down that process of egg loss with aging. Fertility and menopause, these are two areas are very open to exploitation. Some of the corporate greed gets into that.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Does this sound familiar? Hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings, brain fog, aging skin, weight gain, low libido. For many women, menopause isn't just a milestone, it's a minefield. We've been told it's natural, that we should embrace it. But what if that's not the whole story? What if we've been conditioned to normalize suffering because no one gave us the tools or the science to expect better? My guest today is Dr. Kutluk Oktay, a Yale professor and a global pioneer in ovarian biology and fertility preservation. He's the doctor who performed the first ever ovarian tissue transplant. And he's the man making headlines for saying something almost unthinkable, that menopause may one day be optional. But today's episode isn't just about the future, it's about right now. What is menopause, really? Why does it hit some women harder than others? Does hormone replacement therapy help or hurt? And what can you do today to feel better in your 40s, 50s, and beyond? And why would we possibly want to delay menopause into our 60s? You get all these answers today, so if you've ever felt confused, dismissed, or just plain miserable while navigating the change, this conversation is for you. Because menopause is not just a medical event, it's a misunderstood chapter of womanhood, and it's time we talked about it differently. Dr. Oktay, thank you so much for joining us today on Misunderstood. It's such an honor and a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's my honor.
Oh, thank you. So can you start by telling us a little bit about your background, what you specialize in, and how your work led to this fascinating area of science?
Right. I'm a fertility specialist. Fertility specialists are OBGYN by their training, but then they specialize in the area of reproductive endocrinology and infertility. Within that subspecialty, I further subspecialized through my research and discoveries into the area of fertility preservation and approaches to delay reproductive aging. I'm also heavily involved in basic as well as clinical research that evolves around the concept of preserving women's reproductive functions and ovarian functions. We've developed procedures on preserving fertility in cancer patients because a lot of times when they receive chemotherapy, they lose their egg reserve. And I developed a procedure called ovarian freezing and transplantation in the world for the first time, which eventually led to the procedure maybe discussing now to delay menopause. So also we have a lot of different approaches in freezing eggs, embryos, etc. So while I'm a fertility specialist, take care of complicated fertility patients, a lot of my time is also spent on helping women preserve their reproductive function.
I'm just curious, in your past, like what got you interested in fertility and the science behind it? Did you start as a doctor that was like delivering babies, or like how did all this happen?
Right. Interesting. I started training in internal medicine because, you know, I was a curious student. I liked to read and I was a good student. So internal medicine looked like, you know, it's if you like to read, that's where you go. And, you know, I got interested in the endocrinology, et cetera, part, but I realized that I also like surgery, and I was also interested in the origins of life, and which brings you down to embryology. So I liked the area of reproductive medicine, but to be able to get there, you had to do an OBGYN residency.
I see.
So, so I did 4 years of training. Of course, during training, you deliver a lot of babies, but I don't do that anymore. And then I did a subspecialty training in reproductive endocrinology and infertility, which involves taking care of women's endocrine issues as well as fertility, and now largely with IVF. But also during my training, I worked with some top reproductive aging scientists. And I actually went to England by invitation to study one of the top scientists who was also happened to be developing ovarian freezing procedure in animal models, doing the first studies. So I was exposed to that. So when I came back to the States, I started a clinical trial to do that in patients and ended up doing the first successful transplant with frozen tissue, which reversed menopause in this individual. And that kind of jumpstarted the field of what we called fertility preservation at that time. And I think we should really call it reproductive preservation. Gave the idea that certain things we assume to be given should not be given in women's health. Like now we're talking about menopause. So I also continued with my basic research. We investigate molecular mechanisms of how eggs are damaged with chemotherapy and aging. And at my research laboratory at Yale University School of Medicine. Mm-hmm. And we're discovering not only surgical approaches, but medical approaches to deal with the problem of reproductive aging.
Wow. Okay. So listen, it's very interesting. I just turned 50. Listen, when I'm younger, nobody talked about menopause. That was like an old lady's problem, right? And now I feel like only in the last couple of years have I heard a lot of people, and maybe it's because I'm from that generation where a lot of sort of movie stars and actresses and whatever, they're now hitting that age where they've gone through menopause or are going through it and want to talk about it, whether or not because they've run out of things to talk about or because it really affected their life. Now I get it because I'm in the throes of it. And so I like to get as much information as I can about it. And everybody I know is always talking about ways to combat the symptoms and what to do. And everybody seems to have, you know, a very basic idea about it and a basic idea of how to handle it. So I really wanted to have you on because you have a different approach to it, because, you know, what you're saying is we could potentially delay this, or I might be the last generation to even go through menopause, possibly. So that's what I wanted to get to with you. So first, for people that are listening, can we, from your perspective, talk about like, what is menopause?
Right. Interestingly, if you get down to the bottom of the menopause is a numbers game. Okay. Women are born with all the eggs they could have. It's about, you know, when you were born as a little baby, you had a million eggs in your both ovaries combined. But it's a very wasteful process. By the time you got to puberty, it was 500,000, between 300,000 and 500,000 eggs left. And by age 51, on average, in, you know, Western countries, you're down to thousands almost running out of eggs. And that's why menopause happens. So basically, menopause equals women running out of their egg reserve. Because every month, on average, even though thousands of those eggs are trying to grow and they're wasted, only one makes it to ovulation. So lifetime, about 500 eggs are ovulated. So 99.9% are being wasted. You know, think about men, you know, they have an ejaculate, only one sperm fertilizes, everything else is wasted. Maybe it's a bad analogy, but it's kind of, there is this redundancy in the system. And that's when it happens. But that one egg that ovulates produces all the hormones that, you know, give you the well-being that you need during premenopausal years. Before the ovulation, it makes estrogen. And after ovulation, it makes less estrogen, but also makes progesterone, the ovulation hormone, which sort of counterbalances the effects of estrogen on the uterus. Or if there is going to be a pregnancy, it supports pregnancy.
Right.
But that continues until the eggs drop to a very low number. Then, and during a process, what we call perimenopause, those numbers are maybe between 5 and 1,000 or something like that. Ovulation still happens, but becomes erratic. So women still experience some symptoms and have issues. But once it drops below 1,000, there are too few eggs are growing and periods stop. As a result, there is no ovulating follicles producing estrogen, and then all the problems related to estrogen deficiency happens. But it's a gradual process. That's why menopause doesn't happen like this. You go through a perimenopause,
right?
And unfortunately, in the diagnosis of menopause, which I believe should change, has always been retrospective. Okay, come and see us if you haven't had a period for a year. Then we'll call you to have had menopause. By that time, you already lost bone and your risk of heart disease gone up and your aging accelerated. But that's basically what it is. Your ovary is an endocrine organ and it stops functioning. Think about your thyroid stops functioning, but it takes 2-3 years for it to stop functioning. It's no different than that.
Right. So incidentally, because you were talking about fertility and stuff, is there a sweet spot that women should get pregnant in terms of females, like that they should do this pregnancy thing?
Right. It is. Interesting, it's U-shaped. For the longest time, we believed that the younger the eggs, the better the quality. But now we have ways of testing embryos from what we call with PGTA. So very young women are doing IVF, especially egg with egg donors. So we find out that women who are under age 21 or so also have defective eggs. And but that defective percentage also increases after age 33, 34 or something like that. So the sweet spot is between something like 21 and 30, 35.
Okay.
Before and after eggs tend to have a tendency to make errors when they're fertilized and go into replication and result in what we call aneuploidy, abnormal chromosome numbers.
Right. Which is how people get like down, kids get Down syndrome or
Well, Down syndrome is random, you know, that's not age related, but we're talking about they will be having an extra chromosome of this, that, and all that, what we call aneuploidy. And for example, by the time you get to age 44, 45, almost 100% eggs, if you are still ovulating, if they're fertilized, will be abnormal. That's why a lot of women at that age, they're ovulating and you know, all that, but they can't get pregnant or the miscarriage rates are very high.
Right.
So that's another area of research, how to improve egg quality. And that's another area that we are delving into and have discoveries, of course.
And can someone in perimenopause get pregnant?
Of course, yeah. The odds are very low.
Okay.
But that's perimenopause, you know, you switch from, for example, birth control pills to maybe barrier methods, et cetera.
Right.
But there is still possibility, yeah. It all takes one good egg, even though the finding that one good egg at that stage is very of low probability.
Is there, I mean, it sounds like it's about the egg and the health of the egg, but is there an age that you think is too old for a woman to carry a child?
Carrying a child is a different story. You can carry a child with an egg donor, a donated egg. You know, typically we go up to the age of natural menopause. Some programs draw the line at 45, 46. Some go up to 51. Studies have shown that pregnancies with donated eggs above age 50 might have, especially after 55, might have higher risk factors like, you know, cardiac deaths. And these are slight increases or, you know, pregnancy complications. So, but uterus doesn't age like the ovary. I mean, a uterus is as pregnant at age 50 as 20, even at 55, even at 60. After that, it shows some signs of aging. And that's why you hear these stories about women getting pregnant in their 60s with donated eggs.
Oh, got it. That was my next question. I was wondering if that's an ignorant question or something, but after you've gone through menopause, can you either get pregnant or can you carry something that is
put absolutely in? I mean, you can actually carry pregnancy even if you don't have ovaries. There are women who had their ovaries removed at a very young age. All you have to do is replace those hormones your ovary normally provides. So it's not hard to fool the uterus. It all cares is if I'm getting exposed to estrogen and progesterone, that's basically, and you do it in the right way and simulate what nature does and you get the same success.
Oh, wow. So menopause does not prevent you from getting pregnant. If you're taking those hormone replacement therapies, your body is being tricked into thinking that you have a healthy.
Right. As a matter of fact, some hormone replacement forms are not contraceptive. We have young women who had early menopause. They need hormone replacement. I put them on one form, which doesn't prevent them from getting pregnant because sometimes they can ovulate here and there. So,
Fascinating.
Menopause is not hysterectomy. You know, like you as long as you have your uterus and it's healthy, you can always get pregnant. That's why egg donation is a good tool. For very many women, obviously, if there's no uterus, you can also use a surrogate that doesn't address menopausal issues.
Right. I think that's something that's been misunderstood even as a woman. Right. I thought that once you don't have your period or you're not getting your period, there's no shot you could get pregnant. So you don't need any form of contraception.
Right. If you're deep into menopause, the odds are very, very low.
Right.
And plus, after age 45, the egg quality, I mean, almost 100% of eggs are abnormal. So probably contraception is going to be low yield. But if you're in perimenopause, you're in your mid-40s, still ovulating, then you could get pregnant.
Right. Go ahead.
The other thing I want to tell you, the interesting thing is, you're in menopause, you used egg donation and you conceived and you're pregnant and all these hormones are being produced now from the placenta, including estrogen. You're no longer in menopause as long as you're carrying pregnancy. Actually, with egg donation, we have reverse menopause many times, right? But after you deliver the baby, you go back into menopause.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So why do symptoms vary so much from woman to woman and also the age that you can get it?
Right. So let me start with your second question. Age is genetics plus environmental factors. As a matter of fact, there's a strong correlation between your mother's age at menopause and yours and your sister's. So that's one of the first questions I ask my patients when they come to me with the menopause prediction and how to deal with it in the future. And women are born with certain fixed number of eggs. I said 1 million, but that's average. Some women are born with 500. Some are born with 200, 2 million. So women can experience menopause as late as at the age of 62, naturally. 10 years later, 10% of women experience late menopause. That means after age 55. Mm. So women have conceived at age 50 or so because of that. So there is a genetic variation, just like in everything else, you know.
Right.
It's like, you know, height or whatever. You have a tall reserve, short reserve. And if the ovarian reserve is extremely low, then you experience menopause before age 45, that's early menopause. If you experience it before 40, that's premature menopause, which has a lot of health risk factors. So in terms of symptoms, that's more complicated because estrogen is a psychotropic hormone. Estrogen is a drug. It binds to a bunch of receptors, psychotropic receptors in the brain, and it's a very behavioral hormone. I had a patient once, she called herself an estrogen junkie. She was addicted to estrogen. I mean, she would have like drug withdrawal symptoms without estrogen. So, and since everybody's brain is different, there are so many other factors, genetic as well. The way you handle that deficiency is different. So it's a very individual situation. It also has something sometimes to do with how abrupt the drop in estrogen is. If it's a gradual decline, your body adapts to it. But if you had a hysterectomy, like everything drops sharply, and if you don't replace it, the symptoms will be very severe. So that could also determine that. There's also differences, ethnic differences, etc. So there's a lot of that as well. Some women don't have any symptoms, even though they may still have their complications. When we say symptoms, in general, hot flashes, you know, sleep deprivation, they may not feel it, but they may still be losing bone. They may still be aging fast.
Okay.
But the subjective symptoms are subjective.
Right. Okay. I understand that. So you're essentially saying that the drop in estrogen is what's giving women more often than not those symptoms that we all know, which is the hot flashes at night, the mood swings, the dry vagina, the what, you know, what are some other common symptoms that if people wonder if, you know, what they're feeling and what might be perimenopause, what are those symptoms?
Well, I mean, the most obvious ones get the publicity, right? The hot flashes, losing of sleep, vaginal dryness, maybe a drop in libido. But there are more subtle things too. Your skin quality will change. Your tooth health may change. Actually, you have more problems with your dental issues. That's one of the menopause-related problems. Your hair quality may change. And overall, after menopause, there's overall more accelerated aging. So
aging physically or within?
Physically,
you
yes.
might not notice.
Physically, yeah. I mean, think about this. Men don't show that as fast, but as men get older, their testosterone levels drop and they can't build as much muscle. They don't have as much strength. They're not as agile. I mean, estrogen is like an energy drink, you know, for a lot of people. So that overall well-being for most women, you know, like, there are a lot of women, they'll say, I'm fine with menopause. I'm so happy, right? I don't have to deal with periods and all this contraception, et cetera. I mean, that's nature has given that gift to certain people, but for others, that creates issues. Even those women who don't have symptoms, they may still be systematically, like they may be losing bone, their cardiovascular disease risk might be going up, but they may still be feeling well.
Right.
And there are less subtle things. I mean, if you look at women who naturally had late menopause, they have less risk of depression, Alzheimer's, bone loss, vascular diseases. They live longer.
Yeah. Wow.
So there's, you know, there's certain things that you can't immediately measure when you enter menopause, but other than acute, I mean, they say this, you know, life change. It is really, if you look at the science of it, again, you have a good number of women who don't experience this, but for those who experience this, there are a lot of issues.
Yeah, and it does feel life-changing, kind of, having gone through it. I mean, for me, I first started getting hot flashes years ago and kind of was like, oh, do I have COVID? Like, I didn't really know what it was. And I feel like in talking to my friends more recently too, it's like spread out stuff where you don't really know. All of a sudden you have mood swings. You can't just tell if you're annoyed at everybody and it's their problem or your problem. You can't, you know, you don't know if you kind of look terrible because, you know, you went in the sun too much.
You don't look terrible.
Thank you. But you know what I mean? And so for me, the most tangible one was the hot flashes at night. I mean, it felt like I would wake up and an iron was inside of me. And it was so uncomfortable. And then a minute or two later, I would be freezing again and I couldn't get comfortable. And it was just, it was terrible to go through. That to me was the biggest one. And then I feel like lately I've started to lose it. Like the things that don't bother me at all, I'll like flip out about, but then I don't flip out about anything that I should be flipping out about. So like, I'm like, what the hell? Or I feel like, and it scares me. I'm like, oh my God, am I getting Alzheimer's? Like, I completely don't know what I just said, or if I took a vitamin, I'm like, did I take it or not? I can't remember. And I'm like,
memory issues. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, and I think that's a little scary as you get into this, because you still feel young. Inside my head, I keep thinking I'm like 32 and I'm just not. Or I'll do a workout and 2 days later, I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I was in a car accident, you know, because I can't do what I thought I could do years ago. So for me, those are the easy ones. And like, I feel like a lot of my friends are going through something similar and they go to their doctor just kind of does these regular blood tests. They can look at their hormones. And immediately the suggestion is to put them on hormone replacement therapy, which from what I've heard and what going through, if that is the estradiol, the progesterone, and maybe the testosterone. Now, at first I was given the one that you put on your wrist, which by the way, is that a placebo thing? Does that really work?
Oh, no. I mean, the lotions. Yeah, of course. They're pharmacological preparations. A lot of OBGYNs like that, the rubbed version of estrogen you're talking about, right?
Yeah. And then now I have a patch on my stomach. Which again, in my head, I'm like, do these things work? Like, I'd rather get injected with something.
No, they do work. Listen, we use the same patches to for women who are trying to get pregnant, right? That supports their lining. So that's no better proof that they get pregnant and at very high rates. So they do work. They're well-tested products. We know how much estrogen you're supposed to get from each one of them and all that. Okay. So they're all excellent products. There's no question about that. But you know that with Women's Health Initiative, the approach to estrogen treatment has changed significantly. Right now, for for example, American College of OBGYN, the only indication of hormone replacement is if you have severe hot flashes. And that's only during the first 10 years of menopause. Sometimes in a more restricted fashion, if there's bone loss, it might be used. But
if you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Now, all the treatments are directed to, like if you have bone loss, you lose bone medications, and if you have heart disease, you know, lipids, etc. But because estrogen is a quality of life hormone, its use has become limited only for hot flashes. It's used very infrequently nowadays. There's a slight uptick now because of some of the transdermal, et cetera. It might have a safer profile. Some data is emerging, but still a lot of women are, left in the dark in that sense. So,
right. And do you think, is there such a thing as too much estrogen? Can you be putting on too much and all that?
Of course. Yeah. If you use too much estrogen and you don't use enough opposing progesterone, first of all, estrogen induces a risk of blood clotting. If you use too much, your risk of blood clotting will go up. Okay. It also, estrogen induces endometrial cancer. If you use too much, breast cancer risk is going to go up. That's why we use progesterone that blocks its effect on the uterus to get at least every couple of months to prevent that. But too much unopposed estrogen also could increase your breast cancer risk.
Got it. So you got to take them together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in terms of endometrial cancer, yes. The breast cancer, there's a slight increase with even physiological dose. But the total benefit is, breast cancer is easy to diagnose cancer, and it doesn't affect life expectancy, even if you have postmenopausal breast cancer. So, but every hormone drug, everything has a side effect, which you have to take into account right. Against benefits.
Right. So just on a side note, that kind of cream that you're supposed to put on your wrist or inside your thighs, mm-hmm. whatever, would it have an effect if you actually put it on the skin on your face? Like, would it make it look better?
I wouldn't recommend that. I wouldn't recommend that. Now, that's systemically absorbed, and it gets into your circulation, eventually gets to your, all your body. So,
okay. But it's not going to make you look younger.
No, I wouldn't do that. Plus, you might get, different kind of absorption. The levels might be different. So, they're tested in certain parts of the body. I see your temptation to do that, but I wouldn't.
Doesn't work that way.
I wouldn't do that. No.
Okay. All right.
This
good.
Would be no. Anyway. Okay.
So if someone came into your office now and they're showing signs of perimenopause and they haven't gone through menopause yet, where they've ended the 12 months of not having their period, what would you prescribe to them? What should they be doing?
Right. Hopefully we're not going to let them even get to perimenopause with our discoveries. But first of all, perimenopause diagnosis is not that strict, what we call perimenopause. Is it when they first have symptoms or early symptoms, women have symptoms, or is it when their egg reserve shows signs that they it's about to be exhausted even without symptoms? So I think the data are still emerging there, but if they have symptoms at that stage and then I would check their hormones, and I would probably monitor them for a month or so to see, because they may have symptoms but their hormone profile may still be okay. So at that stage might just be a supportive treatment, because remember, we don't want to over replace because of side effects. But if I see that, for example, they're not regularly ovulating and or estrogen levels are low or progesterone is not regularly there, you might just give progesterone to block estrogen's effects so they don't develop endometrial hyperplasia, which might also provide some symptom relief, progesterone alone.
Right.
And if their estrogen levels are low, then you might at that point start giving them transdermal estrogen, which I like, the patch version. I see your point about rubbing, you rub it there, it's on your hands and all that. But the patch is a clean approach. And or they may be fertile. You know, if they're not smoking, if they're early on, then you can even give a low dose birth control pill to have benefits both ways. So, and you make sure that all the healthcare maintenance is there before you do that. You know, a baseline mammogram is there if you're going to start hormones, etc. And again, based on the family history, if there's any history of bone loss, et cetera, you may want to check their bone density if this already is happening. So it's an individualized situation, but it does require a thorough evaluation.
Right. Okay. So, and now that, listen, everybody can go on TikTok and wherever, Instagram, wherever people get their news these days.
Right, right.
And there's places like, I think it's called Him and Hers or His and Hers or Eden and all these places where you don't even need a doctor. You can get some of these things prescribed and then you can start to get these shots, whether they're growth hormones or they're peptides to help women and men maintain or create muscle. Do you believe in that? Or is there something you would say people should really look into doing if they want to start building that muscle back?
I think fertility and menopause, these are two areas are very open to exploitation. And unfortunately, some of the corporate greed gets into that. Did I just say that out loud? But that should not be the approach, if you ask me, because each individual is different. I mean, I just told you so many factors. I mean, unless I have a whole history and physical, I know family history, the drug allergies, I interact with the person, I understand their persona, their aura, all these things. These are individualized treatments. A lot of these things that will give you this and it's going to increase your stamina and all that, these are empirical treatments. There's a reason why we haven't been replaced with AI yet, but who knows? Those sites when you go like, I want this, soon AI might be prescribing you these things.
Right.
But
so it's not as easy as just prescribing testosterone.
No, I mean, yes, we are. Some people say we are bag of chemicals, but... bag of chemicals with the brain. So, there are a lot of your personality matters into your healthcare too, how you perceive everything. So, but besides that, there's a science behind it. A lot of these sites, either they do one size fits all, or I haven't even gone to them, but I'm
no, but you're right. It is one size fits all. They don't really ask you for your symptoms or anything. They just say, you want to build muscle, this is what you get. You want to lose weight, this is what you get. And no one takes into consideration who you are, what you've been through, what you're going through.
Right. Yeah. So I think that has risks and all these drugs have side effects.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So let's talk about the big idea. Can we delay or skip menopause completely?
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely. Because if I told you that menopause is numbers game, right? Mm-hmm. So if we could just keep the numbers where they are or make them dwindle in a much slower fashion, you get there. And and we have already shown that in laboratory research. And right now, I told you about ovarian freezing, which we developed for women and children who were about to be exposed to cancer drugs that would destroy all their egg reserve or most of their egg reserve. So what did we do with that procedure before that happened? We took the tissue out, which had their egg reserve in it, kept it on ice. And then when they were cured, we would just bring it back, transplant them. And then like I have patients, who froze their ovarian tissues when they were teenagers. Now they have 2-3 children having been in menopause for 10, 15 years.
Oh, wow.
From that, we learned that we can reverse menopause this way, right? But we also learned from studying ovary inside out. I mean, my other hat is ovarian biologist. Sometimes people think that that's the only thing I do. No, I'm also a reproductive surgeon. I do robotic surgery, IVF, everything, but I also have an NIH-supported research laboratory for over 20 years now. This is we study. And and there are ways to... a million eggs, you ovulate only 500, and majority of them, you're are wasted. They don't even start growing. They just are wasted and dying. And the eggs that are present in the beginning, before age 35, they have better quality and they have better ability to survive. So the idea is, if I can preserve these eggs when they're healthier and they can, their ability to survive is long, better, and they can last longer, keep them on ice. And, you know, all you need is 500 to ovulate in lifetime. And then just before you enter perimenopause, we return these follicles. And it's like your 401k, whatever. That's when you need it, kicks in. And that would help you extend reproductive life and delay menopause. So we took all the information we learned from cancer patients, and we also took all the information we learned from laboratory research and work with a very smart colleague of mine, ovarian biologist Dr. Johnson, and two mathematicians who modeled this together.
And yeah,
we came up, we did this study, and so this is on our website, fertilitypreservation.org. So you enter your age and how much tissue you freeze, etc. There are some other factors there as well, but we predict that, you know, if you do this early enough, you could delay menopause like 30, 40 years, and which technically means you're eliminating menopause. So whether, you know, whether it should be done or not, that's not a, you know, question we can answer now. But we know women who experience menopause 10 years late, health-wise, they do a lot better than women who experience menopause early. So at least we say that. We have enough data, I think, to say that having menopause 10 years later, or making every woman, you know, same as those who have late menopause, should have health benefits. So, and when they get to age 62, when we freeze these tissues, they're all frozen in little slivers. So you don't transplant everything at once. So when you get to age 62, and we may have new data, it says that delaying menopause to 72 is safe, then we put more tissue and then extend it a little further. So,
but could this mean that 30 years from now, 50 years from now, if this is something that becomes the norm, people could be having children later on in life, and that's normal, that a 62-year-old woman can give birth and that becomes the norm, or not the norm, but
right. So
without as many health risks as we would hear today.
Right. So our, I always say that our goal is not to help women get pregnant during unsafe ages. So because right now, yes, women have conceived at age 60, 65. I think the oldest one is 67 with egg donation. But without knowing the safety of that, our primary goal right now is you have a drop in fertility after age 35, right? And sharp drop after 40. A, we might allow women to just remain fertile up until they're 50, right?
Right.
So leveling the playing field, and then allow everybody to have menopause at age 61, 62. Again, it happens in nature. And then after that, we could see as data accumulates, is this safer? Because people are living longer and longer. I mean, I do believe that maybe 100,000 years from now, people will look back and say, "Ew, people used to die." And when you get to that stage, if you live 1,000 years and you have menopause at age 50, that's ridiculous, isn't it? 950 years, you're going to live in menopause. So menopausal age has to move at a certain stage because we keep working on making people live longer.
Right. So is this something that people are coming into the office now and can request so that they can?
Right, right. We've been doing it. Yeah, we've started doing it. We have patients going through this.
And is it too late for someone like me or someone, you know, in their late 40s that have started perimenopause or even potentially might be in menopause to reverse it?
Right. So at this stage, for this procedure to succeed, at least our formula predicts, you have to have a sufficient egg reserve. So that's usually up till age 40. Sometimes we push it a little bit. Some women have this super egg reserve. Again, that comes into testing your reserve, looking at family history. If you're at the top 10 percentile, sometimes we do it up to 42, 43. But unfortunately, if you've already gotten into perimenopause where periods are irregular, There aren't enough eggs left there, but
too late for May.
But I mean, we can still take a look. But I mean, in the future, things may change. Now, we freeze these tissues and we sort of suspend them in time, right? Mm. 10 years from now, maybe we'll find a technology that can take 5 eggs in there and replicate them and then make more eggs and then come up with some solution. So,
interesting.
You know, sort of when we first started with ovarian freezing for cancer patients, we didn't know it would, you know, help with anything. It was all based on some animal research. We froze tissues and then let's hope that it helped. So when we did start doing transplants, we figured it out. So, I mean, there's possibilities, but right now it's not possible. So that's...
Got it. But I did think it was important what you said, because I think a lot of people think that, you know, the reason why you would want to extend the age to have menopause is because you want to have kids longer. That's not necessarily it. It's just that you see that women are healthier till they go through the perimenopause and the menopause. So it would allow them to be healthier longer in their life. Is the
it is healthier, and also your fertility drop doesn't have to happen. I mean, it's women in their 44, they have to try 10 times to get pregnant, whereas in, you know, 25 it takes you once. Why don't we keep it all the same? So it's good for our health, mental health, and also cost to society.
And I understand delaying menopause, but skipping menopause entirely, would that mean all of a sudden you have no symptoms and you just stop getting your period and it's not a big deal? Or what would skipping look like?
Oh, well, skipping would look like, unfortunately, well, for, I don't know, for some people, that you keep menstruating. Of course, you can stop it with, you know. So basically you're keeping your what you had when you were 35 into your 50s, into early 60s. But so you will experience menopause 10 years later, unless we get to a stage that that delay exceeds life expectancy, then people may die without experiencing menopause. Now, yeah, I mean, people used to die without experiencing menopause.
Well, because they were so young.
It was the other way around. Yes.
Yeah, but you're saying there could be a possibility one day people still continue to just get their period up until 90s.
Of course, yeah. I mean, at least mathematical models predict that, you know.
Right. Why do you think, in talking to all these women, that menopause still has so much shame and stigma around it, do you think?
I mean, I'm sorry. I really that's not something that I hear from my patients. But a lot of, you know, patients, friends, relatives, whatever, for them, it's a happy time in life. You know, it's a period that, you know, just you change your goals, whatever. So I don't want to think that it is the case. But on the other hand, it's part of aging, and reproductive aging is part of aging. And I think the key here is healthy aging. And so why do we have to have such abrupt changes that can affect our well-being? And, you know, we do a lot of things to, you know, treat aging-related diseases. Cancer is aging-related disease. Your body's ability to fix things get weaker and you get cancer. I mean, it's so I think the problem is that we didn't, you know, menopause is not a disease. Yes, but with it, it brings a lot of diseases. So, and people didn't have that kind of understanding. They, you know, it's a destiny. It's like the, you know, death. We're all going to die, so we should all have menopause. But obviously, men don't have menopause, but they do have more gradual changes.
Yeah,
we can make women more like men in that sense too, right?
Right. For me, as a woman, I think it's more of like, you know, in this day and age, there's so much out there about combating aging. You know, women who are in their 50s want to look like they're in their 20s, the facelifts, the plastic surgery, whatever. But you cannot, at the moment, for a lot of people, beat that moment of menopause where that, for a woman, signals like, oh my God, I've hit it. I'm my mother's age now. You know what I mean? So I think, to me, as a woman, that is where the stigma has come from. But I do think that the conversation has changed so much in the last decade about it. And it obviously sounds like there are a lot of things that you are working on that a lot of people I just don't think knew that much about, especially mm-hmm. until that article came out that I found you from. So in the future, I mean, you've talked about a lot of what you're doing now. Are there certain breakthroughs that you are hoping mm-hmm. to discover in menopause care and longevity science?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like with certain diseases, we start with surgery. You know, you take the tumor out and all that. We start with more invasive treatments. And now we're moving towards smart drugs. So that same thing is happening with menopause. In my research laboratory, we discovered, for example, drugs that slow down that process of egg loss with aging. Mm-hmm. So we are planning to study these drugs in clinical trials, which might give the opportunity for a woman to, you know, instead of hormone replacement, you take a pill earlier to delay menopause, add another 10 years. And some of these can be combined with, you know, you freeze ovarian tissue, you also take the drug. After you transplant the tissue back, you take the drug so your grafts last longer. So there are potentially a lot of things on the horizon, and these drugs may also have other health benefits. And eventually, in overall aging science, yeah, there's a lot of hype. Everybody claims they found the fountain of youth. It's more complicated when you're trying to slow down systematic aging. But I do believe that we may make difference one system at a time, one organ at a time, slowly. Maybe our ovaries will be younger than our hearts, or maybe because our ovaries are younger, our hearts will be younger because the estrogen will benefit it. Eventually, as I said, I think, I believe one of the reasons behind evolution is to get rid of death, and menopause would be part. Eventually, maybe a million years from now, the society is going to turn into like people who just live forever and they don't even reproduce. So maybe we're just trying to do the first steps of that with what we do.
Wow. That's fascinating. I've never thought of that. What would you say is the most misunderstood thing about menopause?
Well, I think the most misunderstood thing about menopause is that it's not understood at all. So even when I ask, I ask my residents, I say, why does menopause happen? And then I get like blank stares. Even people in my specialty being trained, they don't know why menopause happens. So, you know, if you look at something as a symptom and you just try to treat symptoms, you're never going to get to the bottom of it. Mm. So the menopause mechanism or why it happens and how it affects women's lives and aging is by largely not understood even by many specialists. So, and for the longest time, we looked at it as if it's a given.
Right, right. Is there something in your future that you're really looking forward to or you really hope that you're cracking the code on?
Absolutely. I think, as I said, we've already, it's a laparoscopic procedure that people come in and the same day procedure, we take a portion of the outer layer of the ovary, which contains most of the egg reserve. And based on our mathematical formula, we can predict how much to remove based on patient's age and other factors. And obviously, when these women start coming back, that's when we are going to know how efficient the procedure is. Right now, it's theoretical based on the ones we did for medical indications. But in the meantime, I'm hoping that we'll get these drugs into trial in the next 5 years, that we start medical delay of menopause and eventually our understanding of menopause being a destiny will change.
Wow. Okay, this might be a weird question, but if you could speak to the men out there that mm-hmm. are dealing with women in menopause, mm-hmm. what advice would you give them or what kind of credibility would you give to what these women are going through?
Well, I would like to hear advice from them. Just kidding. that's a joke, obviously. But I would say that, you know, it takes, you know, it takes a lot for two individuals to understand them and live together forever, et cetera. That's why a lot of relationships break down. And menopause throws another wrench into that equation. So I think both partners have to realize that sometimes they may start seeing things differently. And especially with menopause, there are some women have a lot of quality of life issues, and it makes them to see themselves and others differently, and that can affect relationships. So right. Men have to be understanding, and men are lucky in that sense. They go through that process very slowly, but there's something called midlife crisis, right? So menopause is sort of women's equivalent of midlife crisis. Right. So I tell men to be understanding. Many relationships are damaged or lost due to menopause-related complications. So be understanding and strong during these times. Yeah.
Right. And it's a real thing that these women are going through. It's not just made up. The symptoms are not.
Absolutely not. I mean, as I said in the beginning, estrogen is a drug. It's a drug withdrawal syndrome in a way that body is used to this wonderful hormone for 40 years.
Yeah.
And you're taking it away. And think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Dr. Oktay, thank you so much. This has been fascinating. Please let our listeners know where they can learn more about you, contact you, if they want to learn more.
Sure. They can go to our website, fertilitypreservation.org, one word, or nopause.com. That's the name of the procedure for us to delay menopause, help with extending reproductive life, nopause.com. They can also call us, 877-492-3666. And they can search my name and they'll find us, Luke Oktay.
And you're taking, and you're currently taking new patients still?
Yes, of course we're taking. And as I said, these no-pause procedures are ongoing. And we perform surgeries at Yale New Haven Hospital. They can also find me at my Yale research lab page. We also talk about our ongoing research on that if they type Yale and my name.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Oh, great. It was great being with you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Understood.